Welcome back, everyone, to another week in American politics as filtered through whatever this show has become. I'm John Iadarola, and I'm oddly looking forward to the news, which has not been the case for the last few weeks. I don't know what it is, probably caffeine, but things are looking up. You know what else is looking up? Our co-hosting situation, because as always on Mondays, we've got Francesca Fiorentini. Francesca, how's it going?
I'm doing good. Is there still a virus outside?
Well, yeah, no, that there is still the virus and it's getting worse every day. I had forgotten about that. And there's still like the attempted coup going on. But like, but HBO Max
beyond
is gonna be
releasing
movies soon.
There you go.
And also, I'm apparently like the only person in America that enjoyed the Selena show, so I've got that going for me.
Yes, you are, for sure.
It's all coming up, Johnny. It was good. I don't want to get into it, especially my wife might be watching and she's not happy with that show. And so I might be setting myself up for a bad domestic situation later in the day. But anyway,
the green book is looking up. Selena shows.
I've heard
mostly for white people to feel happy. Keep going.
Well, mission accomplished, okay? I love it when a plan comes together. Anyway, thank you everybody who's already watching us. You may be questioning that decision based on the last few minutes, but no, don't worry. We're gonna get to the politics eventually. Please hit the like button and share the stream if you haven't already so that the algorithm knows that we're here and more importantly knows that you're there. Throughout this hour, we're gonna be talking about a lot, including updated information on what Donald Trump's last few weeks and especially the last few days of his presidency might look like. Who in Trump world's got COVID? Spoiler alert, everybody. We've got, the Georgia runoffs got spicy over the weekend. And maybe a little bit of good news from Joe Biden's cabinet. But bad news for your junk if you get COVID. So we've got a lot to talk about, Francesca. You wanna jump into this thing?
I do.
Let's do it. Okay. Donald Trump from day one. When he rode down that escalator, he decided like the theme of his whole thing is gonna be being humiliated. And he's really stuck to that throughout. Like sure, he's done okay for himself. He became president and all that, but it's been an embarrassing time. The last few weeks have been really a low light or highlight, depending on how you look at it in that area. And so with only a couple of weeks left to be president, why not prostrate himself before the nation once more by fleeing from DC in advance of the inauguration rather than being something approaching a man and actually being a part of the transition. This is the scoop from Axios, which is I get it, it is a scoop, but I love the Axios scoops that are basically just a confirmation of what everybody already knew was gonna happen. But anyway, President Trump is considering a made-for-TV grand finale, a White House departure on Marine One and final Air Force One flight to Florida for a political rally opposite Joe Biden's inauguration. Sources familiar with the discussion tell Axios. The Trump talk could create a split-screen moment. The outgoing president addressing a roaring crowd in an airport hangar while the incoming leader is sworn in before a socially distanced audience outside the Capitol. Socially distanced, but probably still gonna be bigger than his inauguration crowd. Anyway, we got a bit more, but Francesca, what do you think about this? That he's not gonna show up and he's going to try to counter program the new president.
So many thoughts. I mean, first of all, you gotta lament that it might not go down with him. Like I did three scenarios, like either the bin Laden raid, which would be dope, and he like throws Melania in front of him, you know, and prevents you know, White House officials from kicking him off the property. Two would be Shawshank Redemption style, just like, you know, going through like the sewers and stuff and then like finding Red in the Caribbean somewhere. And three would be just like the father in Parasite who hides out and switches on the lights for Joe Biden and just tries to send messages out to get a QAnon or whatever he's sending. Anyway, neither of those sadly are gonna come true, but this, of course he's gonna make it a big thing. My man walked upstairs to prove he was fine from COVID. Like he never walks upstairs. He's going to do something big for his exit that he doesn't even wanna happen. The real thing there, and I wanna know what you think about this, is the word split screen moment. Now, you can only have a split screen moment if the media agrees to cover whatever you're trying to orchestrate here. And watch, I mean, God, I hope we've learned our lesson. And trust me, I wanna see him walk away, but how much are mainstream news outlets going to be just, you know, having Trump withdrawals and wanting to follow him after he's gone and during and fall into his plan?
That's a good question. I feel like in the campaign, I feel like they did better. With some of the stuff about the just endless broadcasting. But it is possible that like they did better because the threat was on. But if the threat's kind of not on, at least not the immediate threat, the, you know, fascism lingering and simmering in the background of American politics, ready to burp up someone to come back in 2024, that's still there. Then yeah, maybe. And sure, it's gonna be the inauguration, so it's not like they don't have stuff to cover, but it's not gonna be a big crowds and parties type inauguration. And Biden is probably not gonna be a particularly exciting first day president. There's all sorts of stuff he could do on his first day, but is he gonna actually do it? So yeah, I share that concern as well. Yeah, it doesn't have to be a split screen. No. You don't have to actually show that. As much as, look, I love seeing the moment when hundreds of people give each other COVID as much as the next guy, but you don't have to actually show it live. Those people know what they're getting when they go to that thing.
I mean,
imagine.
What?
Like, we're gonna be, this is 2 months in the future. We're gonna be maybe past, at that point, the peak of the worst point of COVID in this entire thing, because we're not there yet. That's coming. Crowding into a freezing airplane hangar to expose yourself to COVID to see a guy who's not even president anymore. What a sad way to spend your winter. Anyway, final thoughts?
No, I will just say that anything's gonna be better than 2017. And watching Melania and Trump roll up to the White House, the Obamas have to be cordial to them. Melania handing Michelle a Tiffany's box and being like, here's a gift for your outgoing home, your home cooling. Like, and Michelle was like, what do I do with this gift? And she's just like, and like put it behind her. But like they were leaving the White House right then and there. And who are they greeted by? But the effing Trumps. So like, I'm like triggered and traumatized. I am that screamy lady in the pussy hat every time I think about that moment. So look, anything is better than that. And it's fine. Let him be in a hangar, whatever.
Sure, let him stay there. And honestly, I think he's like doing it like the day of or the day before gets him maybe a little bit more media, but I don't think he wants to linger around there. Like I think he'll leave earlier, but maybe we'll see. You've probably been wondering as the weeks have gone on, how is Rudy Giuliani gonna continue to one-up himself with all the different blunders that he's been engaged in, and we'll run through them. Well, he's found a way with the inevitable consequence of his stupid actions. With Donald Trump revealing to the nation last night, Rudy Giuliani, by far the greatest mayor in the history of NYC, and who has been working tirelessly exposing the most corrupt election by far in the history of the USA, has tested positive for the China virus. Get better soon, Rudy. We will carry on. Yes, and if Rudy ever, you know, succumbs to this virus, I'm sure Trump will be very shaken by that. But look, this is a 76-year-old man. He was admitted to Georgetown University Hospital on Sunday. And I don't know anything about his health or his past physical, but he doesn't seem to be the person best set up to ward off this horrendous illness. Now he says he's feeling good and he's getting great care, and I have no doubt about that. Whatever, you know, monkey medicine they have that they can give him that, you know, us plebs don't get access to, he'll definitely get that because he's one of the loyal ones for Trump. But Francesca, Rudy finally got it.
Yeah.
Finally.
First reaction? Didn't he already have it? Like,
yeah, when you saw it, you were like,
again? Mm-hmm. Is it just that he looks like a walking coronavirus, or that he just always has it? Look, I don't know if marrying your cousin is a comorbidity, but if it is, my heart goes out to Rudy's entire family, especially one particular, apparently very attractive section of it. And yeah, I don't know, like if he's got it, does Jenna Ellis have it? Does Sidney Powell have it? do, I don't know, who else was part of the Adams family legal front there? Like who?
Does the hand have it?
Does the hand definitely has it. Like, so yeah, I mean, look, yes, it does seem like he's set up. He's 76, he, you know, for like a very complicated ride here. But Chris Christie survived COVID, you guys. Mm-hmm. I think maybe being a stooge for the president, maybe there's some immunity there. Maybe somehow the hatred and the denialism keeps you going. Although, as we've talked about, there are people in ICU beds and who died believing the virus was fake.
Yeah. It is amazing. It does, like, obviously, you know, like when regular people get it, I'm sure the doctors try everything that they can, obviously. And I'm just, you know, I'm always gonna be a little bit salty about the fact that I lost a relative to this. But it certainly does seem like they can save the ones they wanna save. I mean, obviously Chris Christie, as you point out, like serious concerns there. Trump is an old man, and the most vigorous exercise he's gotten for the last 20 years is when he like jams the washer button, 1, 2, 3, like that's the most vigorous. This dance.
Oh, come on.
Is the most vigorous exercise, and he survived it. He survived it. So it seems like the ones they wanna save, they can save.
Don't you love when he leans forward in the dance? Cause he's got so much, he's got the meals on, the man heels, and he's like leaning forward. So it kind of looks like
the kitten heels, is that that?
Yeah, he's got like the Kim Jong-un heels.
So obviously, you know, wish the best for everyone who has gotten infected with this terrible illness. Rudy being the 53rd person in Trump's immediate orbit to test positive, which is shocking if you haven't paid any attention to the way they have treated coronavirus. We're gonna turn to the serious consequences of this in a second, but in addition to Francesca getting in her licks against him, I just wanna read one tweet from Jeremy Neuberger who said, I guess Rudy Giuliani can win a case of COVID. That's kind of funny. Anyway.
It's total BS that we have to like send out thoughts and prayers. Although actually thoughts and prayers never work. So yeah, all the thoughts, all the prayers, buddy. Yeah. I mean, I'm thinking about you. Let me send you a little teddy bear instead of doing anything to stop the virus at all. No, I just think it's, look, yes, these are the harbingers of the end of America, essentially. Like they're the ones, I mean, we're talking about 14 million cases in total since the beginning. That's just in the US. Like the amount that we're still gonna be suffering. I keep coming back to this. This is my like latest thing with COVID is like just how much the private insurance industry is going to clean up in the wake of all this. Because of the long-term side effects that I know we're gonna talk about a little bit later. But no, nobody owes Rudy Giuliani absolutely anything. In fact, no, F you for like locking up people with mental illness in New York City and for locking up like people trying to earn a living by like squeegeeing someone's windshield wiper. Oh my God, is poverty a crime? Yes, according to Rudy Giuliani. His legacy is crap. It was always crap. It was crap after 9/11, of course. America's mayor, yeah, like F out of here. I don't even, no. Watch the movie Giuliani Time. It's great. It's probably all pixelated because it's like came out in 2003. But no, this guy was never chill. Rudy Giuliani was never chill. So, and now, you know, he's farting COVID all over the place.
Farting COVID all over the place. And by the way, regular people did not receive anything like and would never receive anything like the protections he's received. He can get tested anytime he wants. Anyone he comes in contact with can get tested. He'll never run out of PPE. He can get all of that, but he did the stuff that we're about to show you. So just bear that in mind. Again, I don't want anyone to suffer. My own family has suffered. Bear in mind some of the context though.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity The UNFDR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFDR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Rudy Giuliani has COVID. The follow-up question then is, who else did he give COVID to since he didn't care at all about either the disease or human life generally? So he's considered at higher risk for complications from coronavirus due to his age. Now let's set that aside and talk about people that we're really concerned about. He has repeatedly disregarded public health guidelines, appearing maskless in state capitals, hotel ballrooms, and indoor news conferences in recent weeks. At many events, many of the other people in the indoor settings were also not wearing masks. So at some of these events, you can spot him shaking hands, hugging. In 2020, he's hugging people. Who would hug Giuliani outside of a pandemic, let alone in one? Taking pictures with people while not wearing a mask. He doesn't care at all what the CDC has said. His son tested positive. Look, we could go down the list. Everybody has tested positive. But I also want to bear in mind, like, you know, Lauren Windsor, so she's a great investigative reporter, goes all around the country. She tweeted out a video where she was asking Giuliani some tough questions about the legal effort, like less than a week ago. And I responded to that video she had put up because Giuliani was not wearing a mask. He was in some state capitol pushing through a crowd of people, including Lauren Windsor, who was wearing a mask. And I said, like, I know the answer, but why isn't he wearing one? And the question is, was he already contagious at that point? Mm. Or maybe I was watching the video where he got it. Who knows? But this is a guy who 10 months into a pandemic that has claimed 250,000 lives wouldn't do the simplest precautions to save his own life or others. And now he's got it, and we don't know who he gave it to.
No, no, not at all. And he had a tweet also, I think, that like something about bestiality. Am I making this up, that Rudy Giuliani said that like anyone who's gotten the China flu might have had sex with animals? Is he trying to tell us something? Is his next wife going to be a sheep? Like, is that what's gonna happen? First it was a cousin, now it's a sheep. Now we gotta accept it, and he's gonna like get all like woke on us and be like, whoa, what? Oh, you want me to use your pronouns, but I can't marry a sheep? Like, I feel like that's what's gonna happen. The other thing that I'm scared about, I'm sorry, I'm going off the rails. The other thing I'm scared about is like whatever they gave Trump, like after he survived, like I don't give that to Giuliani. You know, what? Because weaponized Giuliani.
Ugh.
Anyway, but I will just say also, we know he drinks a lot. And that's just, I'm not like, look, he might have a problem. Alcoholism is real. But my man drinks a lot. Also, if you've seen the Borat movie, the second Borat movie, that was during the pandemic. And he's getting incredibly close to this woman who he has no idea, A, how old she is or how old she supposedly is. But also that like, he's touching her. He's like, you know, fumbling with his pants, trying to get his microphone off, etc. But again, this was all under COVID, and he's getting incredibly close to this person.
Yeah.
So he's not just a creep, but he's a viral creep.
Yeah, and I would say, look, he's already fairly weaponized. Note to the director, if you could get the second video ready to go, we'll go to it in a second. First of all, we all know this dude has a massive gas problem, which has become a chemical weapon because we know that there's concerns about COVID being spread through farts. So Jenna Ellis, who we're gonna talk about in a sec, probably wants to be careful. But also, he's even like testing the weapon on himself. So take a look at this recent video.
Stop it.
Ugh. I think we're good. Yeah, so when you fold it, that's not the right way. I mean, you'd assume an old man would have gotten what the purpose of folding a handkerchief is, but he just snotted on it and then rubbed it all over his mouth and then for good measure gave himself a nice pass over his shiny forehead. This is like, don't surround yourself with people like this during a pandemic. Like, even if this wasn't a pandemic, that's still pretty gross and dangerous.
Yeah, yeah, that's, he's a squeegee guy. Lock him up, man. Put him away.
Exactly.
For doing whatever he's doing with his head. Yeah, he was just missing like the ear thing, like the old man ear. So it's like snot, mouth, forehead, earwax. He's almost there. Gotta get the four.
Yeah, now people in the chat, as we've been talking about this Giuliani story, have brought up the fact that he did fart, but he also farted right next to Jenna Ellis, another lawyer who's working for Donald Trump. So obviously there should be a lot of concern for Jenna Ellis, not just for the damage that might have been done to her lungs by the farts, which are almost certainly noxious, but the fact that she might have been exposed as well. They're apparently not confirming whether she is going to quarantine. She's been recently exposed to someone who has COVID. But anyway, she also popped up in an interesting way with someone just recently left from TYT. Emma Vigeland had tweeted, the last few months for Rudy Giuliani, gets caught allegedly undoing his pants in a Borat movie, hosts an election fraud presser at Four Seasons Total Landscaping, sweats so much his hair dye melts, audibly farts in a hearing and now tests positive for COVID-19, an icon, which Jenna Ellis responded to saying, imagine being such a worm that you'd actually tweet this. The left's glee over the mayor's COVID diagnosis is evil and despicable. So Emma Vigeland confirmed evil and despicable there.
Yes, yes. I mean, that's a badge of honor, dude. That is like next level unlocked. Yeah. You got Jenna Ellis, who really, let's be honest, should be focused on other things. Like their cases, how many more do we have? Georgia's certifying the election today. I guess we're still paying Jenna Ellis. There was something to the tune of like she's already made like $200,000 since October or something. I don't know the exact figure, but it's a lot. It's a lot. And like, for what? She claimed the other day she like changed the password on one of the Trump pressers so that all the media had to type in MAGA 2020 or some crap like that. Like, oh, good job, Jenna. Like, Jenna.
Got us.
Jenna. Got Jenna, us. Who by the way does not have the experience and who is a raging homophobe, transphobe, racist, like straight up. Her history is bad. So we should not feel bad about this woman. They're scraping the barrel here. You got Sidney Powell, just wannabe Carol Baskin, and Jenna Ellis, and now Rudy. And yes, yeah, we should relish in this. Yes, my phone dropped.
Yeah, and look, if you were like, if you're gonna go around judging people, the way people are behaving during this pandemic based on all that's what's happening, like you've got three variables in this: Jenna Ellis herself, and then Emma and Rudy Giuliani. Rudy Giuliani like tells people to take off their masks, doesn't wear his own, hugs people, farts near people. Like, I don't understand like this, but Jenna Ellis, remember, is like a very like she's a performative Christian. That's what she is on Twitter. Before she was known as a lawyer, she was a performative Trump loving Christian or whatever. This is just so perfect for them. Rudy Giuliani not only risks his own life, which is sort of stupid and foolish and ignorant, but has definitely risked infecting and killing other people. But the true evil is the snarky tweet to these people, not the threat to people's lives. It's being kind of like funny online. That's what evil is. No, like, first of all, I'm setting aside the trying to overturn the results of an election that Biden won by 7 million votes or whatever. But Jenna Ellis is part of the defense of a regime that hasn't tried to preserve human life in literally any way throughout the worst domestic crisis we have known as a country and perhaps will ever know. She is totally on board with that, but that isn't evil. Leading to people dying by the tens of thousands and growing. No, it's being a witty lefty Twitterer. That's what's evil.
And exactly, that's what's evil. And the other thing that's evil, and we've talked about this, is every day that Trump spends on contesting this election is a day that he's once again ignoring the powers that have been bestowed to him because he is the president to do something about the pandemic. They've effectively completely given up, and every day, I mean, they've lost both of these wars, but one of them, they can still potentially turn around. And everything they do will save people's lives. So yeah, the blood is on their hands for not acting. And every single day that they divert our attentions into their BS campaign to try and, you know, overturn the election results.
Yeah, 100%. Last week, Rudy Giuliani engaged in one of the last really high profile parts of these legal challenges with their really embarrassing series of star witnesses in Michigan, where they talked to the state representatives there and try to get them to overthrow the election. Now, we showed you video of one in particular that went sort of viral. Let's play just a little bit of it to remind you of Melissa Carone.
The poll book is completely off. Completely off.
Off that by 30,000?
I'd say that poll book is off by over 100,000.
I'm not saying that she's drunk there. I'm just saying that that is a better explanation than anything else. But anyway, it was about 3 seconds into that woman beginning speaking that Twitter was afire with a debate. Who is going to play her on SNL? And yes. A lot of people said Kate McKinnon. But then also there was a lot of people who were like, okay, Cecily Strong hasn't been around for a while. She's been filming her show, but could she possibly come back? Because there's strong shades of the girl you wish you hadn't started a conversation with at a party, Melissa Carone. Well, on Saturday, we found out Cecily had returned and did play. You can see in that photo there, a perfectly wardrobed version of Melissa Carone. That was fun. But Francesca, there was something a little bit less fun about this. In addition to the fact that we found out and talked about earlier that one of the men featured at one of the Giuliani press conferences was a convicted sex offender, we also find out that Melissa Carone has been hiding some legal trouble of her own. Here's another photo of her. This one's a little bit more technical because it's through law enforcement. Police reports obtained by Deadline Detroit reveal obscenity and computer crime charges filed against the 33-year-old Grosse Pointe Woods mom, stemming from a harassment campaign she waged against a 42-year-old woman back in 2018 and 2019. Her boyfriend's ex-wife, Jessica, called Southgate police about Carone multiple times, initially after receiving 3 videos from an unknown email address showing Carone and her ex having sex. Police traced the IP address from the emails to Carone, who initially denied sending them, but revealed she was aware of their content. Eventually, she confessed to investigators, saying her goal was to send Jessica over the top. And that story is the easiest to buy that I've ever heard in my entire life.
Look, she just had to be taught a lesson. And sometimes when you don't know that he prefers me, he likes me. Did he ever do that to you? You? I don't know why I'm here to remind you. yeah.
She's definitely broken into song while yelling at a woman across the Chili's. Definitely. So look, people have been through a lot of stuff. I don't begrudge them their own legal troubles or whatever. But my question would be, you've got the sex offender. You've got her with these sort of revenge porny type thing. I don't know exactly what it's going to be, but it's basically revenge porn to try to destroy a relationship. This is all public information about both of those individuals. So the question then is, Rudy Giuliani and Jenna Ellis and the president's legal team, did they not Google any of their star witnesses? Or did they not care that they had multiple, apparently of various forms, sex offenders who are going to be testifying them for them amidst this nationwide Q thing, which is all about weeding out the sex offenders in society? They're putting them in the spotlight. Why? Are they stupid or do they not care? Or do they know that the people that they're trying to appeal to are stupid and won't care?
That the second part, that they know it doesn't matter at all. I don't know if this is revenge porn, but there's got to be a name for it. Maybe people on the internet know. But when you send your partner's ex a video of you and your partner doing it, that's just like salt porn. That's just like being salty.
Isn't that revenge porn? That was supposed to be private, and now you're using it to hurt them in their next relationship.
It's not with this. It's not with the ex. Like, it's not with her. Revenge porn is sort of like holding something over someone, even though you're not in a relationship with them anymore.
No, I mean, it's a revenge porn about the ex-husband.
Yeah, but with her and anyway.
Yeah, I guess. Anyway,
we'll debate this.
We'll let the judge debate it, but anyway, You know, I really wish that we didn't have a president's legal team elevating people like this, but it did bring Cecily out of hiding. So that is a good thing. I've been waiting.
She was
for that.
So good. She thought about you.
One of my favorites.
Yeah, she's.
I tweeted instantly when she came on screen.
So good, and the other sketches she was in. Yeah, she's like magic.
She's good.
Fun
she's
to
good.
Watch.
She's been missed. Now we just need AD Bryant back. Other than Donald Trump trying to overthrow the whole American democracy thing, the most important political news, like raw politics, has got to be the runoff elections coming up in Georgia very soon. And in that area, we just had over the weekend a couple of debates. One of them even had both of the candidates at it, and that is Kelly Loeffler against Raphael Warnock. And Loeffler has sort of got a lot of splaining to do after she spent pretty much the entire year doing nothing but personally profiting during the coronavirus pandemic. And right now, you know, she's in Georgia, which is ground zero for the president's anti-democratic campaign to try to overthrow the election. So let's go through a few of the different interactions that they had during that debate. Starting with this first.
Senator, did you believe the election was rigged?
Look, Greg, it's very clear that there were issues in this election. There are 250 investigations open, including an investigation into one of my opponent's organizations, you know, for voter fraud. And we have to make sure that Georgians trust this process because of what's at stake in this election. You know, the promise that Chuck Schumer made was to fundamentally change America. And I'm making sure that we don't go down the road of socialism.
Mm. Quick follow up. Is socialism when black people vote? Oh, wait.
I think that's what you mean.
Pretty sure that's what you mean.
Did Chuck Schumer ever promise to fundamentally transform America? I think his job is to stop that from happening, technically.
Yeah, we wish. We've been waiting for that to happen.
Yeah, and so look, the reason that we went with that video first is that is a great preview to what basically the entire debate was. Kelly Loeffler did not go there to defend her record because she doesn't have one. She's not even really a senator. Like, she was chosen to be there. She's protected her financial interests, and that's pretty much it the entire time. She's not running on an agenda for the next 6 years. She's just a corporate robot that exists sort of. Mm-hmm. And she's going to try in a really ham-fisted, awkward way to throw out some of the buzzwords that crazy right-wingers like. And a crazy enough right-winger is gonna believe, yeah, Chuck Schumer's a communist and he's trying to overthrow America. So like, she is in the process of being silent as Donald Trump attacks Republican leadership in the state she wants to represent, because they won't overthrow the results of an election. But she is so soulless, so empty inside, that she won't even engage briefly, even in a way that I would probably describe as intellectually dishonest, with that fact, and just turns it to socialism is bad and I will fight the red takeover of socialism in America. That's it. Delivered with that sort of apathetic, I'm gonna be just fine no matter what happens sort of tone, because she will.
Yes.
She's the richest person in the Senate. She makes Mitt Romney look broke AF. And that's what, we're gonna give you more video, but that is basically what the debate was.
Yeah, yeah. Kelly Loeffler is like all the characters from Big Little Lies. and the abusive husband together. Mm-hmm. And just all the money, combine all their net wealth and put them in power for no reason. Like, she's got three different beach houses to escape to, yeah. Okay? There's no problem here. Her husband, which I'm not sure if Reverend Warnock mentioned, owns the New York Stock Exchange, not single-handedly, but is the CEO of the company that owns the New York Stock Exchange. Like, the plutocrat that she is, the oligarch that she is, she's the worst. And she doesn't even have the dignity to muster a little bit of humanity, just sort of like appear to not be like a money shill. And she can't do that.
I want to jump ahead. Can you bring up the Manny Fidel tweet? Because I think this is a great demonstration of, like, when you, there's a form of, like, there's many forms of privilege. when you have $1 billion, I think that's a pretty durable one where you didn't even have to run for the position you have right now. It's just given to you. Yeah. You feel like you don't have to try to appeal to the people either on substance or on substanceless charisma, because this is what she's bringing. That's four separate screenshots. Nobody but Tucker Carlson has such a go-to default blank expression on their face. She doesn't care. She doesn't care. I'm sure she'd prefer to stay a senator because that gives her a little bit more inside information. We'll go to her finances, but she doesn't care. She didn't even try to appeal to people at that debate. She figures, well, I'm in Georgia. I've got a bunch of money for ads. They gave me the position.
Yep.
Most people are really partisan, and we've suppressed the vote as much as we physically can, even beyond legally.
Yes.
And that'll probably be enough. That'll probably be enough.
Absolutely.
Sorry.
Completely phoning it in. Also, the filler doesn't allow you to express your actual emotions, which might work in her favor. So, Botox, filler. It's the whole works. Look, Big Little Lies, baby. It's working for her. She is one big, big lie.
Kelly Loeffler has a lot to answer for. Really, the only person who comes close is also running in one of the runoffs, and that is Purdue, who we'll turn to. But the fact that Kelly Loeffler has apparently been cleared on all the stock trading and buying that she did with secret information, that she should not have any public position ever for the rest of her life. And apparently she's going to be cleared. Warnock, at least, is trying to make it a campaign issue. So here they are with that back and forth.
Loeffler, when you received the private briefing regarding the coronavirus pandemic, you dumped millions of dollars of stock in order to protect your own investments. And then weeks later, when there came an opportunity to give ordinary Georgians an extra $600 of relief, you said you saw no need and called it counterproductive. Why do you think it's counterproductive to help ordinary Georgians in the middle of a pandemic?
Well, thank you for that question, because I've been completely exonerated. Those are lies perpetrated by the left-wing media and Democrats to distract from their radical agenda. Since I got to the Senate, I've worked hard to deliver relief to Georgians during this pandemic, and I'm continuing to do that.
Okay, so while he was talking, I get why Manny Fidel was able to get those screenshots, because she just had that same dead-eyed, thousand-yard stare that only a billionaire who knows everything's going to be okay could possibly have. But he was right. She opposed aid, still isn't, but like, she's a senator. She could be pushing for it right now if she actually cared whether the people of Georgia live or die, but she doesn't, because they are peasants and she doesn't care about them. All she cared about was protecting her own interests. The fact that she could get this private briefing and then go and sell off stock and then buy stock in companies that would benefit during a pandemic and then go and tell the American people everything's gonna be fine, don't worry about it. Like, I would say if she could get reelected, it will be evidence that American democracy fundamentally doesn't work if you can do all that and get elected. But it doesn't even matter. It's already broken. None of it works. Like, she can't even hide behind charisma, honestly. She is so obviously corrupt, obviously explicitly corrupt, and she's exonerated. But that is an indictment of the system. That's all it is. It should be illegal. It's not. That doesn't make it right. It doesn't make it moral just because the system has been set up by corrupt people like Kelly Loeffler. She's not the only one. What the others came before her and set up a system where they could corruptly benefit themselves financially. She thinks that that's a defense. It's on Warnock to make sure that the people understand that that is not a defense in any way. Lay out what she did. No regular person thinks that that's acceptable. Nobody actually thinks that that's cool that a billionaire gets to do that during a pandemic where they're like suffering and dying and losing their jobs.
Absolutely. And this is what we know now. I mean, pull the string and think about any, I don't know, company she's invested in that got PPP loans. We know that that's been going around a lot. You know, Trump, Kushner, their real estate properties have gotten PPP loans, protected like no jobs because of it. We're not done here. Like, this, it's such an important example of the way the 1% does not care about whether we live or die at all. They physically and economically, they don't care. And so look, Loeffler man, she may win. She may very well win because, like John mentioned, there are millions of dollars in ads that are streaming into, you know, the only place that people are right now, which is their homes mostly. Yeah. But that being said, there are grassroots organizations, and the Georgia did turn blue, all right? You guys, there is a sea change there. And there are grassroots organizations who've been building in the communities that have felt completely iced out because they only see someone like Loeffler. And you know, and Warnock, let's give him credit, is coming at this and not saying, well, I'm not gonna touch that because it's, you know, I don't wanna play dirty politics. He's going right to it. Mm-hmm. He is mentioning it because, as he should, this is what the Republicans represent, and what he represents, and what he's saying is, I want there to be relief, economic relief for people. So I think we need to not forget what Warnock is offering in this moment, and the fact that he is a more progressive Democrat, that he is African American, that he is running a grassroots campaign. And man, I really hope that that shows and paves the way for Democrats, that you got this, you know, Wall Street Barbie who should be so easy to beat. And Warnock is giving, I mean, the polling is close. Warnock is giving her a run for her money.
Yeah. Yeah, and look, Warnock is not everything that we would obviously want in a candidate, but Kelly Loeffler is just, they took a sack, they filled it up with corruption and billions of dollars, and that's all it is. It's like, it should be the most obvious example, I think, in an election that I can remember, other than possibly Donald Trump, and he's been able to sort of hide behind this fake populism. I would love to show you like vigorous back and forth between the candidates in the other runoff election happening in Georgia, which is John Ossoff versus David Perdue. But unfortunately, David Perdue has come down with a case. Well, don't relax, it's not COVID. It's just being a big old weenie, being a big scared, craven weenie. And so David Perdue, grown man, isn't at the debate. Why? Because he's scared. He'll come up with some other excuse. I'm sure, oh, he's really busy. He was able to hang out with Donald Trump and possibly get infected by COVID from him. But he is just a weenie who is terrified of John Ossoff owning him the way he did in that video that went viral during their last debate. And so here's a nice little photo for you. The photo of John Ossoff gesturing at the podium is just amazing, that they're having a debate for the Senate. This isn't like class president, you little weenie. You wanna be a senator and you won't even stand for like an hour and a half and explain why you should be given that position. Well, anyway, we do have one video from that. Let's play this last video from the Perdue debate.
Republican David Perdue has served in the US Senate since 2015. Before his election, he sat on the board of five major corporations and co-founded Perdue Partners, a global trading company. Senator Perdue declined to participate in this debate and is represented by an empty podium.
Now, that's good. I would have liked an empty podium with a tiny little weenie resting on it. I think that that would have been a more appropriate image. Mm-hmm. But he's just not there. He's just not there.
And it's Invisible so man. Beautiful because he is, just like Kelly Loeffler, an empty suit. You could put an empty suit up there with a MAGA hat on and a, like, you know, healthcare, that's communism, like whatever, like a pin, and that's it. You are an empty suit, and how beautiful and brilliant that he was too much of a scared little boy to have to face his own record, to have to talk in the middle of a pandemic, in the middle of your runoff. Homie, how scared are you? You can't even get up there and recite the lines that Kelly Loeffler did.
How much would you pay to have had John Ossoff? Because nobody's like gonna come near them on the stage.
And give me a massage, a lot of money. I would pay him a lot to come and like cook me dinner and give me a massage. He's very attractive. Okay, are we done now? Is that the question?
Okay, this has gone in a different direction than I expected. No. If he had like reached into his jacket and pulled out a rubber chicken and had gone over to the podium and just propped it up against the mic, a rubber chicken, what would they have done? Would they have sent someone to take it off? Like, there should have been a big chicken. Uh-huh.
Which
or like he had a guy in a chicken suit come out and just stand there.
Like, wave.
Bob is that.
Any kind of like the inflatable like car dude. That guy? Mm-hmm.
The inflatable arm flailing tube man. Yeah, you could definitely get one of those, do a little dancing going on. So Perdue Again, he's another one of these Republicans, doesn't have an agenda. And it's not just Republicans. There are other Democrats who just get into office to stop things from happening. That is basically every single Republican, though. And it's amazing that Georgia has two senators who are so similar in that respect. They stand for nothing, that they'll just go along with, like, oh yeah, I guess if America, you know, continues as a democracy, I guess I'd be okay with that. If Trump wants to make it some sort of fascist state, I'm also fine with that. I'm certainly not gonna speak up against it. Oh, and by the way, their two senators are also two of the most corrupt when it came to those trades, because Kelly Loeffler, she did the most, but only by virtue of the fact that she's way richer than Perdue. Perdue was exactly as corrupt as his bank portfolio would allow him to be. If he was richer, he'd be more corrupt. He's working on it. Give him 6 more years and he'll be way more corrupt by the end of that. But he also bought and sold stocks based on private information, and that's totally legal because our system was written by people corrupt and just as corrupt as Perdue. But he wouldn't even bother to show up. At least Kelly Loeffler showed up, or, you know, like a sort of like Uncanny Valley robot version of Kelly Loeffler. Perdue wouldn't even show up to receive his owning in person.
Yeah, and like I said, I think no matter what happens in January, we need to consistently come back to this moment and these two senators. We should never forget them. And we should never forget the ways that they're trying to dupe the MAGA crowd, which are believe in fake populism, even though they themselves, they're not billionaires. They can't sell off stock. They've been duped, right? They're part of a cult that says maybe they'll one day be rich enough to be a billionaire. No, you're not. You're not gonna be a billionaire. Sorry. And Warnock started talking about, you know, Georgia hasn't expanded Medicaid under the ACA. A lot of red states have said, no, we don't want Medicaid. Well, guess how many millions of people that is prevented from getting healthcare, and now in the year of the pandemic. So let's never forget, because there are a lot of right wingers in Georgia. You know, maybe it's cultural issues, but we know now it is this fake populism that says, you know, yeah, make America great again. And there's an economic message implicit in that. Well, guess what? These goons are not carrying that message forward. It's fake populism. Let's continue to expose that and continue to lay stuff on the table.
Yeah, my hope is that both Republicans will lose, and we won't know for sure exactly what reason there'll be for that. Will it be sort of the big rubber chickens coming home to roost for Trump and Sidney Powell and Linwood and all of them telling them not to vote? Would it be the voters saying, okay, we're Americans, so we'll accept a lot of corruption, but come on, you gotta hide it a little bit better than this. I don't know.
Right.
I don't know, but I really hope so, because our elected representatives already know that they're not gonna face any legal consequences for doing the sorts of things that both Loeffler and Perdue got caught doing. But they need to understand that there's at least a potential for electoral consequences. And to throw just a little bit more stakes onto it, so we have these two people who basically represent Wall Street above all else. Just do whatever benefits rich people and stocks and all of that. So there was a bit of news in Bloomberg Green over the weekend, and it was about water futures are gonna start being traded on the stock exchange like gold and oil and other commodities.
Oh my
God.
So
water is now gonna be a thing that they're going to be like doing their like cool little back and forth little trades on. Access to be able to have water, which is like part cyberpunk corporations overall and part Mad Max Fury Road.
Yes.
I don't know which apocalypse we're going towards, but this is the way we're moving. And I'm not saying that Ossoff and Warnock are gonna be like the, you know, like anti-Wall Street warriors that are gonna take down this whole thing, but they're at least hopefully gonna be a little bit more responsive to what their constituents actually want, which is probably not wealthy people getting away with murder.
Mind you, some of the first people who are being considered to receive the vaccine are Wall Street traders, you know, because they have to slime over one another when they're trading our water futures, literally and figuratively our water futures. And so they need to cough in each other's mouths when they scream that they want to rip us off even more and, you know, put our future in their little gambling unit. All of my money is in a mattress in my bed. Okay, that's all I gotta say. It's not smart. It's not smart, but it's there.
No, it's stable though. They say that they're essential workers. Like, I don't know if there's anything less essential than rich people pushing money back and forth between each other that has nothing to do with a product or service. Like the people who have decided that Tesla is worth $500 billion are not essential. They live in a fantasy land. It's not as cool as the one that I live on, you know, with my friends where there's orcs and stuff and elves, but they live in a fantasy land. They just have control of everything. Not essential. They can wait at the back of the line like me and you. We have been very critical of any number of Biden cabinet picks, and get ready because there's going to be a lot more of that. But there is one that maybe is not as bad as it could be. So the New York Times reported just on Sunday that Biden is nominating former congressman and current California Attorney General Xavier Becerra to run Health and Human Services. So why is that important? Well, that's important because in the past, at least, Becerra had some pretty progressive things to say about where health insurance and healthcare should go in the future. As recently as 2017, he said, "I've been a supporter of Medicare for all for the 24 years that I was in Congress." And he said he would fight to create such a system in California where it was considered in the legislature. An outspoken advocate of improved healthcare service, he said in 2017 that he would absolutely support Medicare for all. A source familiar with the selection said Mr. Becerra would support the president-elect's call for strengthening and preserving the ACA and would not be pushing Medicare for all while in office. So that's the sad part. So the sad part is apparently Becerra is going to be backing off those previous positions, but Becerra has been supportive of it in the past. So if we put enough pressure, and I mean us, but I also mean like progressives in the Senate and in the House, if it starts to build momentum as is possible, you at least will have someone in that position that is not going to be a last roadblock to actually implementing. This is someone who maybe if things start to shift could be a part of that pressure in the future. I don't know, maybe I'm getting too optimistic, Francesca.
No, I mean, I think this is a really awesome appointment. I think it was stemmed from the fact that there weren't enough Latinos in the administration, which is great that that was part of the calculation. And might have meant that we got someone like Becerra over somebody else, right? The only thing that I'm a little sad about is that like potentially moving from like Medicare for All might happen on a state level first, and especially in a state like California, which does have the resources, or in New York, which they are considering. They have something called the New York Health Act, which they are going to be discussing in the legislature. So I'm a little sad on that end, but he's also, you know, he's AG in California and he's not in the legislature in California. So it is really good. He's someone who's fought for reproductive rights here in California. He has, he's sued Trump 100 times, part of it over the ACA and dismantling of it. He's defended the ACA. He's tried to get crisis pregnancy centers, which are these bogus, you know, reproductive rights healthcare centers that try to get women to continue to have their, finish their pregnancies rather than consider terminating them. He's tried to get rein them in. So there's a lot of good there. I will see. He's going to be obviously hamstrung by a status quo president, but you're right, open to more pressure.
Yeah. And just to give you an idea of a few of the other things that hypothetically he could push for. Back in 2016, Becerra was one of the 51 House Democratic lawmakers who signed a letter calling on Obama's Health and Human Services Secretary to use so-called march-in rights to effectively rescind exclusive patents for medicines whose research and development was originally funded by government agencies. Well, now you're going to be in that position to potentially do that. As HHS Secretary, Becerra would be in a position to facilitate state waivers to make it easier for states to create Medicare for all systems. Becerra will also be in a position to facilitate proposals to allow American pharmacists and wholesalers to import lower priced FDA approved medicines from other countries. Is the thing that's there've been big pushes for that in the past. So even if Becerra is not going to be immediately an advocate for Joe Biden to go for Medicare for all, there are a lot of areas where like we often hear, let's strengthen the ACA as a way to say, let's not do Medicare for all. But there are some things you could do to strengthen the ACA that would actually be pretty sweet.
Yes.
And now Becerra is not going to have much of an excuse to not do it.
No, and yeah, exactly. Medicaid expansion number one is really, really crucial and making that easier. Obviously, that comes down to the legislatures in each state. But something like those waivers, that's huge. You know, it all gets super complicated when you're talking about healthcare, which is ridiculous in and of itself. It's why I think a lot of us are for Medicare for all. But the bureaucracy of getting a waiver for each state if they want to go their own way, I think if he can undo some of that is really, really good. The other thing that he did in California on this that has everything to do with trying to reform the current private system we're in a good way, even though I know hard to reform it, but Sutter Health was like consolidating and having like a lot of anti-business, anti-trust, anti-competition activity here in California. He put a stop to that. He like sued them or something and blah, blah, blah. The point is that's great because more and more consolidation in the private healthcare system means we all get worse healthcare and they make more money. So even just preventing the consolidation and breaking up some of these big healthcare, health insurance companies and providers is a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. 100%. So that's a good one. Hey, hey, we got one, sort of. Yay. Guys, hold on to your junk because COVID's coming for your crotch. Take a look at this.
Infection. We now know that people could have long-term health effects from this virus, neurologic complications. And now for men who are watching this, there is some real concern here that men could have long-term issues of erectile dysfunction from this virus because we know that it causes issues in the vasculature. So this is something that is of real concern. So not just that this virus can kill you, but can actually cause long-term, lifelong, potentially complications.
Mm. So that's obviously very serious on top of everything else we found out. Can I, quick note, did anybody else think that she was kind of smiling just a little bit while she was saying that? I don't know. Anyway, but yeah, so a lot of people haven't really taken it serious up until this point. The threat of death, you know, for themselves and their family and their friends hasn't been enough. The long-term like chewing up of your heart and your lungs hasn't been enough. But the possibility that you could suffer erectile dysfunction, is that maybe the thing that'll get through to them, Francesca?
Where was this months ago? We should have been talking about this. You got that COVID D, you know, you got the whiskey D, now you got COVID D. It's the vasculature, the vasculature. That's gonna be on every Tinder profile now. Have you had COVID? Okay. Look, it's the lasting effects of COVID are no laughing matter, of course. It's incredibly serious. But like, look, we've been reduced to our lizard dumb brains in this moment. So if the worry for not being able to get it up gets you to put a mask on your stupid face, let's talk about it. Let's do it. I know also some people are like, well, it might be kind of good because that means anti-maskers won't be able to procreate. Mm-hmm. And I do think that might be an added benefit. You know, I'm not gonna.
Maybe
good. But I do know that in 2024, Trump's slogan, "This is my thing," is not gonna be "Make America Great Again." It's gonna be, you know, "Make my junk work again." And it'll bring people out. Make it average again.
Look, and if you're watching this and if you're a conservative male, I wanna come at you from two directions here. So one is the obvious one. It's that wearing the mask can protect your ability to have an erection. That is certainly good. But I also want you to understand that that still would require you to wear a mask. And I know you're under a lot of peer pressure to not take the virus seriously. But also understand if you continue to not wear a mask, what message that is sending to the world, not the message it's been sending this whole time, which is that you don't care if you infect someone with a disease and they die. That's bad enough. You're sending the world the message that you're not worried about getting erectile dysfunction. What's one reason why a guy might not be worried about getting it? Because he already has it. I'm just saying, maybe if you continue to not wear a mask, you're sending the message to the world that you're already pushing rope, buddy. I'm just saying.
Lives are on the line. This is why Joe Rogan has been a little bit of a lightweight anti-masker, because he's pushing, isn't he pushing like, you know, pills for the vasculature anyway? Like, isn't he pushing boner pills?
I don't know.
I just think if we can get through to Joey, if you're listening, I'm not gonna talk about the white supremacists that you've given platforms to. Just please, it's about your dingling. Put a mask on your face. It's not manly because it actually will literally emasculate you if you don't put a mask on. So in fact, the entire opposite of what you and other people have portrayed mask wearing as, which is, oh, I'm not gonna get sick.
Yeah. And I want to make sure, just in case, I'm not a mind reader. I'm looking at the chat and YouTube and Twitch. I don't know for sure this is what they're thinking, but I want to get out in front of it. I do not want you to now begin thinking about people like Donald Trump and Rudy Giuliani and thinking about the fact that they're potentially going to suffer this, that Donald Trump is going to go from years and years of sex being accompanied by a fear that he's never actually going to satisfy a woman to now being able to not even physically satisfy in the first place. Don't think about that. This is a personal tragedy, and I don't want you to have any schadenfreude. By the way, can I also mention one thing? So that doctor that you saw there has been the progenitor of a million articles about this. This is a thing that now people are talking about, including right on our show. But to be fair, I think this was from July. There's an article. I want to give you one of their conclusions. This is from a scientific article. Despite being a trivial matter for patients in intensive care units, erectile dysfunction is a likely consequence of COVID-19 for survivors. That was in a journal back in July, and it didn't get coverage then. It was only once one of the people went on TV that suddenly we're talking about it. But this is not a new thing. There was concern about that before. And again, this is like one of the least serious consequences of all. We're talking about mental health problems that have been linked long term to COVID, as well as problems with your lungs, problems with your arteries, problems with your heart. There's lots of reasons to wear a mask. Now yes, we've just got an additional one for you.
I'm just scared, because if incels weren't bad enough now, think about what they're gonna be like when they are dealing with COVID consequences, can't get it up. I'm scared. I'm just scared for this country. The COVID cells.
I'm worried about them. Incel 19. Anyway, this is for today. This is our last bit of just please take this seriously. We tried in advance of Thanksgiving. Clearly the damage report wasn't successful, but now we got Christmas coming up. Just please take it seriously. For your sake, if not for anything else. Okay, now, thank you, Francesca, for joining me for that.
I want a mask that says for your dick's sake. For dick's sake.
For dick's sake, take it seriously.
Thank you for having me, as always.
Thank you. What was going on this weekend on the Bituation Room?
So good. We had Brent Terhune, who's a comedian who's done a bunch of like fake MAGA videos. I'm sure you've seen him sounding off about how his boat drowned the SS Margaritaville. You've probably been fooled by him thinking he was actually a Proud Boy or a MAGA supporter. He was on, and Juan Cole, the historian, we talked about US foreign policy. It was so good. So listen to the Bituation Room podcast, wherever you get your podcasts, or watch it on my YouTube channel at Franny Fio. And there's a lot of Dragon Squad folks over there, which is so great. Nice. Love it.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. Have a good one. We'll talk to you soon.
You too.
We don't know exactly when Donald Trump is going to accept reality when it comes to the presidential election, but we do know that behind the scenes, both Donald and the rest of his family, that whole, you know, sort of inner circle, are planning ahead for their next steps. And joining us now to give us an idea of what forms those next steps might come in is Washington correspondent for Business Insider and the author of Piety and Power, Mike Pence and the Taking of the White House, Tom Lobianco. Welcome to the Damage Report.
John, thanks for having me on.
Very glad to have you here. Enjoyed your article on Business Insider, which is about what this whole squad is going to be doing. So I know there's been multiple sources and they don't always agree, but what is an idea of some of what the planning that's happening right now?
Yeah, you know, I think I got started on this in a discussion with a former Trump 2016 campaign advisor, and he made a really interesting point. This is about a week or so ago. He said, look, if you look at where the family is going, and generally speaking, of course, we refer to the Trump family as like the oldest children, the ones with the most political ambitions. Although I guess you could throw Tiffany Trump in the mix too. She's been showing up more on the campaign trail. But you know, looking at where Trump Jr. is going, not Eric Trump so much, but his wife, Laura Trump. And what you see is what I started to pick up on, and some other folks have noticed, is that they're really hitting like every corner of the conservative Republican ecosphere right now. And it's not, you know, it's not necessarily just running for office. And of course, Trump Jr. is the name that comes off the most often for that. Define irony, though, his father would probably be the one to box him out of running for president down the road. Assuming that's real, you know, we have to see, right? But you know, look, Trump Jr., folks close to Trump Jr. were telling me that, yes, he was looking at running for the NRA, the job of held by Wayne LaPierre over at the NRA, which is the executive vice president and CEO. Now, I will say this, we got some very hard pushback from other people close to Trump Jr. saying, no effing way, that's not happening at all. Trump Jr. Himself also tweeted in response to the story and said, nope, not doing that. Definitely don't want to do that. I talked with a few of my original sources on that. They tend to view that as, you know, Trump Jr. was trying to position himself for this. Maybe it got exploded when it came out in public. So now it's not going to be very successful anymore. But generally speaking, what I think you're seeing is the Trump family writ large trying to sink its claws into power right now. And there's a lot of people on the right who have been waiting for them to leave. So that it's not a guarantee.
Yeah. So really fast, I know we don't know for sure with Trump Jr., but did the initial sources explain why he was interested in that position?
Yeah, you know, a lot of the same calculations that you see from the other kind of prospective 2024 candidates in the Republican field. It's, you know, how do you, one, not fight against Trump, seeing as how he is still the dominant force on the right now. Two, how do you find yourself a good perch so you stay in the public eye? For him, of course, you know, he wants to be in the big political battle going forward. And there's only so many books you can write that will keep you out there. I guess you could pump out a book a month. I don't know. I've never done that. I don't know how to do that.
No, me neither. So he's like the main kid is Don Jr. What about Ivanka? Are she and Jared just expecting to be able to reestablish themselves as New York area elites, like the same social circles, or do they have a particular plan too?
Yeah, I think that one's kind of that idea had more or less was deep sixed by the entire Trump administration. So I don't hear that they're going to be able to do that again. You know, there's been some reports out there that they're going to go back to New Jersey, maybe move back to Trump's golf course there, live at a quote unquote cottage on the grounds. I'm sure it's not actually a cottage. It's something probably nicer than that. You know, one thing that we reported about back in October and we've been keeping close tabs on is this Trump media effort. You hear from various parts of Trump world that they're looking at creating some sort of either a competitor to Fox News or something in the lane of like The Blaze and Newsmax and, you know, sort of like an online outlet. And for Jared in particular, Jared Kushner in particular, that was a discussion leading up to the election. Now, you know, how realistic is that? Don't know. What I do hear from Trump advisors is that looking at Jared and Ivanka, they tend to be the more cautious, the more strategic of the family members. So they would be more inclined to kind of hang back. So where Trump Jr. might go out in front and try to stay in the public eye more often, they're more inclined to kind of hang back, see where the chips fall, and then make a move. And that could be years from now. It's still hard to tell.
And, you know, I thought I had heard some sort of rumor about possibly Don Jr. or maybe Kimberly Guilfoyle trying to sort of take over the RNC.
Yes, that's right. So we reported that back in August, I think, right after the RNC, the convention, the pseudo convention that they had. And yeah, back then, you know, look, a lot of Trump world was talking up Kimberly Guilfoyle, his girlfriend, as RNC chair. Now that was if Trump won. Obviously, that changed. But you know, the funny thing is, if you look at it, it didn't really change that much because the idea was that Trump would still get to pick whoever is going to run the Republican Party machinery. And that's an important thing because that is the group, the RNC, which determines how the nomination goes. I mean, that's effectively who picks the next nominee for president for their party. So it didn't change an awful lot from Guilfoyle, though, because you remember Trump himself, probably like 3 or 4 weeks ago, endorsed Ronna McDaniel to stay on as the RNC chair. And it looks like that's going to happen. But I'll tell you, there have been a lot of people very frustrated by that on the right because it looks like a guy who's probably possibly running for president in 24 trying to hold the nomination machinery, which is a little frustrating for them, frankly.
Well, that's interesting. So let's focus then on 2024. So we've sort of alluded to the fact that some of what his kids might want to do, especially if they have political ambitions like Don Jr., might be thrown off by if Donald himself chooses to run. But some of the recent stories I've read imply that we might not have to wait a couple of years to find out about that. That whatever announcing now means that Donald himself might announce like in like 3 weeks or 4 weeks or something like that.
Yeah, he, you know, it's possible he could do this from Mar-a-Lago as, you know, while he skips the presidential inauguration of Joe Biden as the 46th president. That's been talked about. You know, what I've heard from his advisors is that they want him out there and they want him controlling this space. But if you do anything official, that creates legal requirements, which limits his ability in terms of, you know, what he can do, at least in the ensuing 2 years from now. So I've been hearing a lot that they want them to hold back, don't file any official paperwork. It sounds like he does want to. Everyone I talk to says that he does want to do it. And I guess the other part of this too is that he would be what, like 78 years old if he ran again in 24. And that's 78, you know, in Donald Trump years as opposed to Joe Biden years. Okay. So I don't, you know, I don't know if that's like added mileage on there, but you know, you do hear that from some Trump folks that, okay, he might be too old for it, but make the announcement now, still control the ecosphere, and then potentially, you know, make an actual decision later. Yeah. Still very much in flux right now, frankly.
Have you been hearing anything from people in the orbits of any of the other potential Republicans who might want to run, a Ted Cruz or maybe Paul Ryan reappears on the national political scene? Like, I have to imagine that they're probably not happy about the prospect that there will not even be a short period where Republican politics isn't entirely about Donald Trump.
First, you know, I've heard this when I talk with this where the campaign strategist folks around some of these different perspective campaigns. And you know, what's funny about this, I think it's probably good for everybody, frankly, is that, you know, journalists are more actively covering the 24 race now, when it's shaping up, than I think we have in the past. And I think that's good for the public because it gives you a real sense of how these things actually work. So, you know, I'll refer to like Nikki Haley or let's see, you know, Mike Pompeo or Mike Pence or, you know, any of these people as like 24 candidates. Nobody has actually announced, of course, but you know, colloquially in our world, they look like 24 candidates. You know, for some of these people, to get to your question, for some of these people, it's kind of a good thing for them, actually, in a weird way, that Trump is freezing things because it gives them time to lay low and not look too ambitious. Where it hurts the most, and I'm actually working on this right now, is we update our 2024 race rankings. For some of them, if they've tied themselves too close to Trump, I'm thinking about people like Ron DeSantis, the governor of Florida, certainly Mike Pompeo, Mike Pence to a lesser degree, just because he kind of had an established career before joining Trump. Mm-hmm. For those people, it tends to hurt because obviously you're tying yourself to somebody who looks like a candidate right now. So he, you know, as they say, right? Why, you know, why go for the knockoff brand when you can get the name brand itself, right? So,
yeah.
And that's kind of the thinking I've heard from the strategists. Now, I'll say that this, everyone I talk to says this does help Larry Hogan, the Maryland governor. If there's anything close to like an anti-Trump, never Trump Republican lane, he's got it. You see him making very effective use of it right now. He's been putting out his online ads. He had a rehash of his speech at the Ronald Reagan Foundation, where he talked about trying to move the party forward past Trump. It remains to be seen. We haven't seen very much good polling on, you know, how the Republican base is reacting to these 24 candidates. But you know, look, it's, things are happening fast, frankly, faster than maybe in the past. Yeah. So
really fast on that. Has Mitt Romney given any indication that he might want to be a Hogan type? He's been willing to occasionally go against Donald Trump in the past few years.
I'm not sure. I have not heard Mitt Romney's name come up with the folks that I talk to. I haven't heard Paul Ryan yet, although I think I need to check into that now. There's a guy who's certainly young enough and would occupy a lot of that sort of that establishment / moderate, you know, whatever. I mean, it used to be conservative 10 years ago. I don't know if that counts as conservative anymore. Yeah. Not in the current environment.
I'm not sure that the definition has much to do with policy anymore, but okay, interesting. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of variables that we don't have a great read on just yet. But I appreciate you playing out some of the hypotheticals for me. And anybody watching this who wants more information about where various members of this group is going to go, you should go to Business Insider, and Tom's work is available there. Tom Lobianco, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Awesome. Thank you, John.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.